We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
How you doing, Ivy Nation Sports Talk? Up and rolling, Jesse peering in. I think your lighting has changed like five different times since you sat down to start things up.
I don't know why bad light always follows me. I can never get good light anywhere.
I know. Jesse is actually in my kitchen as he makes his way back from Chicago to Cleveland. So we're in different parts of the same house, but as you can see, my lighting is a lot better than his lighting right now. Maybe just hold that lamp up the whole show, and that's a lot to ask. You've got that. There's that spinning thing. There you go. That's perfect. That's as good as it's going to get when it's getting darker again. Why does it keep doing that? That's bizarre. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today. NFL draft, of course, started last night, continues today and tomorrow. Second and third rounds today. We've got a couple of questions in the chat, but Joe, be safe out there. I think Joe is in Omaha, if I remember correctly, says he doesn't know if he can join the show because there is a tornado warning. Duck and keep us on as long as possible. We'll try to keep you company with a lot of Notre Dame and NFL draft talk on today's show. We are going to start with Joe Alt and his Salty says he was drafted number 5 overall. When was the last time, if ever, Notre Dame had a player drafted higher than that? Do you know the answer to that question, Jesse? Because I do.
Where did Jimmy Clausen go?
Jimmy Clausen is not the answer.
I know it's not Brady Quinn.
It's not Brady Quinn.
Will you give me a position?
It was a quarterback. You have to go back to 1993.
Before I was born, I'm already out.
It was before you were born. It was Rick Meyer, who went number 2 overall to the Seattle Seahawks. Drew Bledsoe went number 1 that year. Joe Montana, of course, infamously not a first-round draft pick, but Rick Meyer, number 2 overall. That is the highest that any Notre Dame player has gone in the last, 31 years now at this point. Yep, Goshen, Indiana, Rick Meyer, number 2 overall in 1993. Salty also wants to know if Ivy were holding a chat draft, would DK be taken in the first 3 rounds? What's your response to that?
Yeah, I think DK, Salty, Tommy Guns, they would be, for this show specifically, there's some chat warriors. So I believe that they would potentially be number one pick overall.
I think he'd go first three rounds. I think he might, you know, I think he'd have to be easily first three round. Okay, right. 275,000 people at the draft last night in Detroit.
Broke the record.
That was nuts.
Broke the first day record, I guess I should say.
Yeah, it's there's no way it's like I think Nashville has the 3 day record with like 600,000 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's what they were saying last night. But I thought it was funny. You know, we were watching the draft last night. As soon as the Lions made their pick, it was time to file out in Detroit.
I know.
That number started to shrink pretty quickly.
It emptied out very quickly. It did. You know, you're a man of many hats. I've got a few hats of my own. I don't wear them as much anymore. Could you pull off one of Cam Newton's hats?
No, I don't think I could. But funny story, I do own one because we were having a few years ago, one of my friends was he was dating this lady who liked to throw kind of like themed parties.
Uh-huh.
And one of the parties was Space Cowboys. And so I had one of those kind of hats that Cam Newton has, and I wore it with my outfit. So I do have one in my closet, but I got mine from Target for like $5.
I don't know how Cam travels with all those hats. I saw him yesterday on TV, and he had two different very stylish
I think when
hats.
You have that amount of money, you have bags, and you don't care about traveling mm-hmm. with your bags.
Can't imagine how much.
I don't know if you've seen it, but I have a hat carrier for all my hats as well. So I'm curious if Cam Newton might have a hat carrier.
He very well might. He very well might. Well, let's get into it. Fill in the blank. Joe Alt going with the number 5 overall pick to Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers is blank.
Is exactly who Jim Harbaugh is. You know, yesterday I wasn't on the show, and I don't know if you and Vince kind of talked about where you thought Joe Alt would go, but I thought Joe Alt would go number 5 because Harbaugh is all about the trenches. That's how he won a national championship. At Michigan, he had a very good offensive line. He had a very good defensive line, and that allowed JJ McCarthy really, you know, it almost kind of took the ball out of JJ McCarthy's hands. You know, he just had to kind of not turn the ball over and just really run the offense. And so when I think of Harbaugh teams, I think of teams that are built really sound, you know, in the trenches up front. And so knowing Justin Herbert is your franchise quarterback and him getting hurt last year, you just really can't allow that to happen anymore. So I just felt like it was the perfect combination for what they needed and who Harbaugh is.
Yep. I mean, it's funny that you asked if Vince and I talked about it last night, because as a matter of fact, we did. Let's go to the Wayback Machine here real quick. Could shake things up. I wouldn't even be surprised if there's all this smoke screen about the Chargers and the Chargers are going to trade their pick, and you know, like Minnesota or you know, one of those teams is going to end up there picking a quarterback at number 5. I wouldn't be surprised if Jim Harbaugh just goes Joe Alt at number 5. That doesn't mean he will, but you know, Harbaugh's blueprint everywhere that he has been
is
smash guys off the line of scrimmage and protect your quarterback investment and smash some guys with a guy like Joe Alt. So I wouldn't be surprised with that. So I think he'll end up going before 7. That was our question last night, whether or not Joe Alt would go before the 7th pick, which is where everyone had him projected at, like to Tennessee. Obviously, that didn't happen. He went number 5 overall. I think he surprised a lot of people, even some Chargers fans. We were talking about it today, a little bit disgruntled that maybe they didn't go out and get some offensive weapons since they lost both Mike Allen and Keenan Allen. Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. Excuse me. I think I said Mike Allen, but you know what I'm talking about.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Get offensive weapons. But look, you know, just what you said, this is, you know, Harbaugh was asked about it. And what did Harbaugh say? Tip of the spear, right? The offensive line is the tip of the spear. Offensive linemen are weapons in their offense. That's his approach. That's the approach that he has had since he showed up at Stanford. When he turned that thing around, Pete Carroll and Chip Kelly were, you know, with their big flashy offenses, were running past people out there in the Pac-12. And Jim Harbaugh came in and said, well, we're going to go the other way. We're going to go, you know, like we're basically going to do the Moneyball version of college football out here in the Pac-12. And they went smash mouth and they won a lot of games with that. He took it to San Francisco. They won a lot of games with that, got to a Super Bowl, took it to Michigan, and obviously won a lot of games with that, especially the last couple of years, winning the national championship. It is their formula, that old school formula. And Joe Alt is an old school offensive lineman. I've said before, I think Joe Alt is going to be the best that Notre Dame has had basically since Quentin Nelson, in terms of going to the NFL. So what, 6-7 years, something like that.
A couple things. Just to play devil's advocate, like if, you know, I saw some Chargers fans mad, like, oh, well, if you knew you wanted to take tackle, why didn't you kind of try to trade back and potentially get, you know, draft capital and that sort of stuff? Well, you know, I just don't see it that way, because I think Joe Alt was clearly the best tackle in this draft class, and I don't think you can bank on him being anywhere after your pick. Like, he could have went anywhere essentially after that point, right? So I don't necessarily buy that. And the other thing is, too, you know, if you want to run the ball, if you want to pass the ball, what do you have to do in order for that to happen? You have to have protection. You know, your quarterback has to have a clean pocket. And if you want to run the ball, you got to blow people off the ball. So this is just like we've been kind of talking about, this is like Jim Harbaugh's formula. And what you were talking about of, you know, kind of projecting how good Joe Alt will be in comparison to, you know, the rest of these Notre Dame offensive linemen, Ronnie Stanley, Quentin Nelson, Zach Martin, Mike McGlinchey. He went before all of those guys. He's actually the highest drafted offensive lineman in that group. So I think that should also speak to how good he really is, you know, and how well he's probably going to project in the NFL.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it, 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Quarterbacks and tackles, guys who can protect the quarterbacks, are still a high commodity. And obviously, guys who can get after the quarterback, edge rushers, are a high commodity as well. Very interesting that it took until the middle of the first round, after the middle of the first round, for a defensive player to be drafted. I thought that that was very interesting. But all these quarterbacks went up high, and we'll talk more about the quarterbacks. But, basically, the Chargers I realize that offensive linemen don't sell tickets and it's not sexy to draft offensive linemen, but the Chargers, like the Chicago Bears, need a lot of help. And the Bears obviously got their guy at number one with Caleb Williams, but at number nine, they went with wide receiver. They go with Rome Odunze. And honestly, I think, and I said it before, I thought the Bears should have either gone with one of the offensive linemen, and there were plenty of tackles still available there at number nine because of all the quarterbacks who went so early, or someone who could, be a difference maker on that defensive line. Those would have been the two priorities, but I would have prioritized the offensive line. We'll see how far it gets. When you look at the Bears, and I realize this is kind of getting off on a little bit of a tangent, but you look at the Bears not going that formula and going with Odunze instead, between DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, how's Rome Odunze going to be a difference maker early on? Those are two veterans who are going to probably catch 80% of the passes for the Bears next season. Odunze is down the line. You need, if you're drafting a franchise quarterback at number one, you need a franchise offensive lineman who can protect him. And the Bears have not invested heavily in the offensive line traditionally for a couple of decades now. That's the way I would have went. I think the Chargers did it right. I don't think, this was obviously not a reach at all for Jim Harbaugh to take Joe Alt at number five, because he's the top rated tackle. He's the best tackle in the class. And he is going to, the Chiefs better watch out, because once Jim Harbaugh gets a few more pieces in there, it's not going to take that long. Within a couple of years, the Chargers and Chiefs are going to be the teams who are duking it out there in the AFC West. And the Chargers are going to be competing to go to Super Bowls as well.
As much as I dislike Michigan and maybe some of the antics they got into this past season, I'd love if Jim Harbaugh was my coach, because I know what kind of football he's going to play. And I know that he's going to get things, turned around. And you talked about – this is my conspiracy, so don't take this to – this is just Jesse's personal conspiracy.
Uh-huh, okay.
I think Caleb Williams was the guy who selected at number nine. I think they said, you tell us what you want. You're the number one pick. When he was visiting, because there was all the talks and rumblings about how he potentially maybe didn't want to be in Chicago and, XYZ, I feel like he had some sort of input on – hey, we want to let you know that you're our guy. What do you want to do at nine? Do you want an offensive weapon? Do you want an extra pass blocker? That's just me personally.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that theory. They were throwing together last week and, they were obviously, right, doing some stuff already. And I don't doubt that the Bears, after all this talk about would Caleb Williams want to go to Chicago, and there was the talk about he wouldn't go there initially, and then all of a sudden he was good. I don't doubt that they had that conversation with him and said, what do you want to do here? Let's take your input to make him feel good right off the top and start the relationship off on a good, a good foot with him and trust and all that kind of stuff. I don't doubt it. It's not a bad theory, I don't think.
And then also what I was going to talk about real quick or highlight, you talked about this. This was an abundance of offensive players in the first round. I think more in the first round that we've ever seen. But I do know for certain in the common draft era, this is the first time zero defensive players have been taken in the top 10. The top 10 was all offense for the first time ever. I think that shows the transition of the game. You know what I mean? All these, everyone wants fast wide receivers. They want to spread things out. How can we get the ball downfield? We're really starting to see that what I would call the Patrick Mahomes and Chiefs effect on the rest of the football. How are we getting the ball downfield? How are we using speed, etc.?
Yeah, DK, great point. When he's getting sacked every four plays, he'll ask for more protection. Of course,
I need to link. I need to link him the Kyle Brandt. I don't know if you saw his tangent, 4 minute tangent this morning.
No, what did he say?
He told Lions fans to enjoy this success while you have it now, because you got a lot of Bears talent rolling into the city, and there it's not the same old Bears anymore.
That's a Chicago guy. That's a Chicago guy coming through. We'll see about that. We'll see about that. We'll see if the formula works. Look, a couple of days ago, I went through the whole thing about why I wouldn't take a quarterback that, or not a quarterback, a wide receiver that high. Because as I said, over the last 25 years, there have been nearly 100 wide receivers selected in the first round. And only 16 of them have gone to the Super Bowl with the team that drafted them. Only 8 of them have won a Super Bowl with the team that drafted them. And if you go back even farther to the AFL-NFL merger in, 1966, there have only been 3 wide receivers who have been selected, I think, in that range, who have gone on to the Hall of Fame. So it is a much bigger crapshoot when you're talking about wide receivers that high than offensive linemen. You're going to keep your quarterback upright. And as I said before, if you're picking that high, you're not a wide receiver away from being a legit contender. You need a lot more things. And it starts where Jim Harbaugh, builds the foundation, and it starts where Marcus Freeman has talked about his foundation as well. Offensive, defensive line driven program. That's where it starts. You got to start from the inside out and
control that line of
scrimmage. Personally, I think it was Caleb Williams. I don't mind, but I think that Adunze over a big nasty was a mistake. And
yeah, I agree. Joe Alt
was a great pick at number 5.
The best way to kind of sum up what you're saying there is I think that the gap between some of the elite tackles and, the rest of the tackles were bigger, but I just feel like there, in terms of talking like boom or bust, there is a way higher chance of bust taking a wide receiver in a top 10 than there is an offensive lineman. There's just so much more certainty when you take an offensive lineman in the top 10, because, to me, after like maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers, I feel like the talent gap at the wide receiver, that gap isn't so great that you should want to take someone that high. Why not take an elite offensive lineman and grab another wide receiver later on in the draft type situation? But again, I think this all falls back to Caleb Williams had some sort of input. He probably wanted the offensive weapon, and that's the direction that they went.
Good call. I like it. But again, I love Jim Harbaugh going with Joe Alt at number 5. Big time pick. Highest a Notre Dame offensive lineman has been selected that high in 55 years. It's been a little while.
Congratulations to Joe Alt, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. So speaking of Jim Harbaugh, so I was watching Good Morning Football this morning as it made its 2-day return. It's like we got it yesterday and today, and now it's going to be gone for the next 3 months again. But they had Ohio State head coach Ryan Day on this morning. And he was primarily on there to talk about Marvin Harrison Jr. being picked number 4 by Arizona. But Jane Slater, who is one of the hosts, asked him a question. And I've got her question in here. So I'll let you hear the question and the answer from Ryan Day.
We just talked about one of his guys, but Harbaugh. He's finally out of the Big Ten. I imagine a little bit of a sigh of relief. I'm kidding. But I am curious, what is your relationship with Harbaugh? And what did you see that he did for, the college to see him go back to the NFL?
When you come to Ohio State, first off, the rivalry is something that's front and center every year. And, it's something that, when you come to Ohio State, the number one thing that we talk about in recruiting all the time, it's about, winning a rivalry. And so that's just a part of what you do on a daily basis. And so because of that, we work on that every single day. And so that's, again, our focus this year. And so, as how much of a rivalry that is and everything that comes with it. So, year in and year out, we just, we look ahead to see, what the challenge is, and we look forward to that game.
So, Jesse, again, he was asked about his relationship with Jim Harbaugh and Jim Harbaugh's effect on the game. Can you translate that Ryan Day answer for me?
Yeah, that Ryan Day answer was, me and Jim Harbaugh do not get along, and so I'm going to dance around this question and tell you, you know, why that game means so much and why we dislike each other, because that game means so much. So, you know, it just felt like classic Ryan Day, you know, like I just wish that he could just put down the pettiness and just answer professional questions when he's asked a professional question on a professional network as we're drafting professional players, right? Like,
yeah, I mean,
that is your whole part of being on there, is to give just reliable answers, context, you know, whatever it might be, not sit up there and essentially continue to be a crybaby because he doesn't get along with certain people.
Yep. Couldn't even fake it. Translation. Here's a word salad for you.
Man, it felt like he was a politician up there just answering everything but the question.
Translation. We're not trading Christmas cards. Translation. I'd rather be asked about Lou Holtz than this guy.
Well, it's just
translation.
Like,
Jim Harbaugh is in my head rent-free, you know? Translation, well, I hate Jim Harbaugh. Why, like, why didn't you just say I hate Jim Harbaugh? Like, if you want to be honest with it.
I think the best way that he could have answered that, if he really didn't want to answer it, but still kind of give some sort of answer, is, well, we're happy he's gone because he's beaten us the last X amount of years. So obviously he was a good coach. You know, like, that's all you really had to say. You know, like, you can give an answer without giving an answer. And he couldn't even do that. Like,
yeah, I know. He couldn't even fake it. You know, that's the thing. He couldn't even fake it. That's what's crazy about Ryan Day. He is just so petty. And obviously, Harbaugh made the comment a couple of years ago about some coaches were born on third base and think they hit a triple. You know, like, that's...
I mean, it makes sense, though, because Jim Harbaugh, he builds it from ground zero. Like,
you can hate Jim Harbaugh in Michigan all you want. And, you know, none of us are Michigan fans, obviously. But... when you look at what Jim Harbaugh has done at every stop that he has done it, you've got to respect the job that he does as a head. He was easy to make fun of there for a few years because he wasn't winning some of those games. He wasn't beating Ohio State early on. He wasn't even beating Michigan State early on. And the recruiting wasn't great, but obviously they turned a huge corner over his last 3 years there. And you've got to give him props. And he's back in the NFL. So if nothing else, I mean, as a Notre Dame fan or an Ohio State fan, you should that. He's gone. You don't have to worry about
that. That's what I mean. Like, that should have been Ryan Day's response. I'm happy he's gone.
We'll miss him. I'll miss this rivalry, but I'm glad he's gone. Yeah. Fake it, man. Fake it. Matt says, translation, Ryan Day cries in the shower after dyeing his beard with shoe polish. That's a good one, too. I like that. That's a very good one. So six quarterbacks were selected in the first within the first 12 picks of the first round last night. Here's my question for you. I mentioned Rick Meyer earlier going number two overall in 1993. Brady Quinn went in the first round in 2007. Those are the only two Notre Dame quarterbacks to go in the first round in the last 31 years. And you can go back even farther than that. I think you can go back all the way. Those are the only two since 1955, actually, from Notre Dame to go in the first round. So my question to you, Jess, how many quarterbacks will Notre Dame see drafted in the first round in the next 5 years?
So I know there's going to be a lot of Homer answers out there, but if we have to go off of trends and the past, like, you're not going to have two in the next 5 years after only having two in the last 31 years, right? Like, let's just kind of maybe do some common math here. But I think that they have a high probability, the best chance now than they probably had in a really long time. I'm gonna give the safe answer, and I'm just gonna say one, but there is potential for two. I think that Riley Leonard is definitely one, and then CJ Carr is the wild card. If he can do what we think he's going to do and be the, you know, the quarterback and the athlete once Riley Leonard's time is over, I think you can make a strong case for two. But I'd like to comfortably land on one and take my chances with Riley Leonard or CJ Carr.
By the way, before I give my thoughts, smack that like button, if you would, while you're in here. All the loyals and disloyals, hit the like button real quickly and boost us up here a little bit. I made this 5 years because this covers not just Riley Leonard and CJ Carr, but it goes out to 2029 as well, the potential for Deuce Knight. Haven't seen him you know, even in a blue gold game or in a college practice yet. So I'm not going to make any guarantees about him. I'm willing to say yes, Riley Leonard is going to be it. Obviously, health is going to be a concern for him. If he stays healthy, he was projected as a number one pick in this year's draft. Had he stayed healthy last year, that's obviously how he was being talked about heading into that Notre Dame game before that high ankle sprain. And look, this isn't just hyperbole on CJ Carr based on a couple of, you know, like scrimmages, live practices that we've seen. This guy obviously came to Notre Dame with pretty lofty expectations and a high skill set. And what we have seen from him so far, now, has he played a snap of football so far? No. But this is the kind of guy that when you combine both of these guys with an offensive coordinator like Mike Denbrock, I think that they've both got great shots to be first-round draft picks basically within the next three drafts, 2025 for Riley Leonard, then you go to 2027 with CJ Carr. I mean, look at where Daniels is. 2 years ago when he was leaving Arizona State, no one was going to put him in the conversation for a Heisman Trophy or being the number two overall draft pick. So I'm going to say Riley Leonard, yes, and CJ Carr, yes, will both be first round guys. Ooh. I think we're going to be talking about CJ Carr, you know, like the way we were talking about, you know, like Drake May, all these different guys as a high first round draft pick type guy here in a couple of years.
That's Let me ask you something that just came to me.
Okay.
Do you feel it's right that Notre Dame would get to claim someone like Riley Leonard because he was only here for a year and they didn't develop him? Like Duke did all the legwork. Like he was already going to be
because he wasn't a highly rated guy coming out. Yeah.
That's but what again, I mean.
LSU gets to claim Jaden Daniels. He was only there for 2 years. He started at Arizona State, right? But LSU is claiming him. So why not?
I think if he has great success, like
I mean, Duke is going to try to claim him too. Don't
that's what I mean.
If he ends up going high, Duke is gonna find a way to claim him as well.
They'll hang a Riley Leonard banner.
That's right. They'll hang a Riley Leonard banner.
They'll show it off to recruits. Hey, look at this guy. You remember him?
Yep, that's right. So I'm going 2. Are you, like, if we go scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you 2 guys within the next 5 years end up being first-round picks?
That'd be 5. I'd put that at 50-50. I'd put 5 out of 10.
Okay, I'm much more confident than that. I'm going 8. I'd say
if Vince 8. Were here, he'd say 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10! They can do
CJ Carr is the answer, baby.
The next... John is even more confident. He says 10 out of 10. But, yeah, that would be Vince, man. Vince would tell you that the next 10 quarterbacks from Notre Dame will
play. Let me ask you this, though. First round. Who was more highly
– We love you, Vince, because I know he's going to be listening at some point.
Yeah. Vince, it's all good fun, I promise.
Look, you can't see Jesse's face anyway, so you can't even prove that it was him saying it.
Yeah, exactly. Just another question, though. Let's look at Jimmy Clausen and Brady Quinn.
Okay.
Coming into Notre Dame. You tell me, were they about the same hype as CJ Carr, less hype as CJ Carr, more hype than CJ Carr? I'm just trying to do a comparison because remember how good we felt about Jimmy Clausen and
Brady Quinn had virtually zero hype. There was no hype on Brady Quinn.
Okay.
Coming in. Jimmy Clausen, I think that there was even more hype on, way more hype than on him. Because, like, you probably don't remember it.
I mean, it was Charlie Weiss's guy.
He did a commitment, and he had all these, you know, like the state championships in California, and he was flashing the state championship rings and all that kind of stuff with the spike blonde hair and all that. And, you know, the 2007 blue gold game, there were more than 50,000 people there, and I think that there you go, the hype with the limousine and all that different stuff. So so there was even more hype with Jimmy Clausen, but Jimmy Clausen had a much different personality as
well.
That's true.
You have to respect CJ Carr's kind of just commitment to football and really nothing else. I think he's more mature than what Jimmy Clausen. Like, Jimmy Clausen for what it was kind of a pampered boy. You know what I mean? Like, he wanted it all. And I don't think he realized that there's still hard work to be done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Carrie asking, what happened to Ryan on?
Are you trying to say that we're not good enough, Carrie? That's how I interpret that question.
Ryan is a Tuesday guy, and Ryan had some internet issues on Tuesday. So he did not make his Tuesday appearance this week. And it's been a little hit and miss anyway, but he had some internet issues Tuesday, and so he was not on this week. But Tuesday is the only day he does this particular show. He is
honestly
not,
if you're
not a
looking,
Friday guy.
If you're looking forward to Ryan, this next Tuesday would probably be good because I'm sure he's going to recap the Notre Dame draft guys, right? Like, that's what I would
very
anticipate
well might
would happen.
Yep. Like Clausen says, number one quarterback in the class. Quinn was 4-star, nowhere near the hype. And, you know, Quinn ended up being a throw-in with Chinnerdom and Duqua. Like that, he wasn't even he was like that. They were high school teammates, and that's how Quinn ended up coming to Notre Dame. He like that was part of, you know, like how
the deal.
Yeah, that was how was Tyrone like, Willingham ultimately got him. You know, was
it
because
like
of
that
Chinnerdom Duqua connection?
Manti Te'o and that wide receiver that came with
Toma.
Him? Toma.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's, you know, but I mean, like, that's where the connection, like, that's how
you
they
still
got
have
in
to have the talent,
on Brady
obviously.
Quinn. Right. That's how they got in on Brady Quinn.
So
and obviously it was
up.
Charlie Weiss who was able to bring the talent out of him.
Right. To wrap this up, I guess where do you put your confidence in CJ Carr? More so than Jimmy Clausen, less so than Jimmy Clausen? You see what I'm trying to get at here? Like, I'm just trying to compare something that's had a concrete result of Jimmy Clausen and then maybe kind of, you know, use that to allow where we project maybe someone like CJ Carr to go.
I mean, Clausen obviously went in the NFL, though not a first-round pick, interestingly. I mean, he was still an NFL guy. You know, I've already said I do absolutely, based on the tools that we've seen from CJ Carr and the background and the upbringing that he has, I've already got more confidence. You know, I've got the confidence that he is going to be a first-round pick. And, like, I think he's going to be a really good college quarterback. How much I'm always leery, you know, like, you knew how good Jimmy Clausen was, and then, like, you saw what Charlie Weiss was able to do with Brady Quinn, and Clausen did a lot of good things offensively, but I'm always leery when there's that much hype on anyone coming in the door. There was a decent amount of hype in the Notre Dame circles on CJ Carr, but again, nowhere near what it was with Jimmy Clausen, just because of all the extra stuff that people have talked about between the limousine and the rings and the press conference. It's just a lot more flashier, you know, whereas mm-hmm. Carr, again, I think because of his upbringing, the fact that he had a dad who played at Michigan, and obviously his grandfather who won a national championship at Michigan, and just all of that, I think that he is far more focused on
football,
like the actual grind and doing the work, yes, of
development,
than maybe some of the flash that comes with it. There was definitely a good amount of flash when it came to Jimmy Clausen.
Nice.
That didn't match. You know, obviously, if his talent in production had matched the flash, I mean, he would have been a Hall of Famer. But that's not the way it worked out for him.
You know what the funny part is, and I don't mean this in any sort of way. I'll always remember Jimmy Clausen and that bright stinger he had on his eye in the game where he had to wear the visor.
That's right. I forgot about that. And Carl wasn't rated as high as Clausen either. But, you know, again, Clausen was the number one rated quarterback that year. And to an extent, he lived up to it. But, you know, like the program itself, everything around it is just in a completely different place right now than where Jimmy Clausen was from that 2007 through 2009. Not even close. Like, when you look at both sides of the ball, just the way the program is built right now. That was a big missing piece, obviously, for Charlie Weiss. Henry saying, Carr Denbrock, Coach Marcus Freeman. Let's go. So Nick Saban was part of ABC's NFL draft coverage last night. And the former Alabama quarterback coach said this about Toledo cornerback Quinyon Mitchell after Mitchell was drafted. Quote, he was our number one guy in the portal last year to try to get him to come out of the portal, and he would never get in the portal. End quote. Fair or foul?
I'm going to say fair because I love the honesty. And if Nick Saban is saying it, I'm sure every other coach was doing the same thing. You know what I mean? It wasn't just a Nick Saban thing of, hey, we really want this guy to hop in the portal. I just think it's funny Nick Saban has been retired for like 3 months and he's already freaking, you know, spilling all the tea and all the secrets and everything. That's the only thing that I consider foul because everyone immediately was like, oh, tampering, you know, blah, blah, blah. Listen, there's far worse things that go on. And again, I'm sure Nick Saban's not the only guy reaching out and saying, hey, what do you think about hitting the transfer portal, right? I'm more so shocked that he's just releasing all these secrets and he's only been retired for like 3 months.
And he's just saying the quiet part out loud. You know, he's like right. Homer Simpson, like blurting the stuff out. Like, did I think that or did I say that? You know, and, oh, you said that. And oh, by the way, the cameras and microphones were right up. But he didn't care, obviously.
He's
not there anymore. So he couldn't care less at this point. But, you know, the other side of it is this is a guy who is whining and moaning and complaining about the transfer portal and all the effects of the transfer portal and this kind of thing. And here he is admitting that he was trying to influence top players from other schools to get in the portal, which is obviously some kind of, you know, tampering, illegal contact. You can go through third parties and all that different kind of stuff. And, you know, he can claim that he did, but then he says on national TV, he did it, you know, and nothing's going to come of it because they're all doing it out there because it absolutely is the wild, wild west. It's just crazy that he admitted it. It was just like, you know, again, it's like a double take. Did he really say that? He actually said it. So the biggest shocker of the night in the first round was the Falcons selecting Washington Husky quarterback Michael Penix at number 8 overall and after signing Kirk Cousins to a 4-year, $180 million deal last month. Do you see, this has obviously been beaten to death on a lot of different platforms today. Do you see any upside to this move?
Yeah, like you said, this is like the most talked about thing ever since it happened last night when the Falcons picked 8th overall. I'm going to say there's no upside, and I could talk about this for a while, but I'm going to try to be kind of, you know, short and concise with my points here. I just don't understand why you give someone a 4-year contract, $100 million guaranteed, with a no trade clause. That's also an important part of this formula, a no trade clause. And then you go out and get a quarterback because when that 4-year contract is up, Michael Penix is already 24 years old. He's going to be 28 years old.
It's not like they got a 21-year-old or 22-year-old. Like they got a quarterback who's already on the high end in terms of age.
So what this says to me is you don't care about winning right now, because if you cared about winning right now, you would have paid Kirk Cousins and then you would have improved on the defensive side of the ball, or you maybe would have got, you know, an offensive talent to help Kirk Cousins out. I guess I just don't understand why you're paying someone $100 million if you plan to develop another quarterback in the background at the same time. It just doesn't make sense. And I think Kirk Cousins does have the right to be upset, because I guarantee in the free agency process, they never once mentioned to him, hey, we're probably going to draft a quarterback with our top 10 pick this season and also sign you as well.
But are we really going to feel sorry for Kirk Cousins? Like Kirk Cousins has cashed in so much money for being basically, what, 7-8 games above 500 or something like that for his career? I mean, it's like this guy has taken – he cashed a big check when he signed with the Atlanta Falcons. He cashed a couple of big checks with the Minnesota Vikings. So I'm not going to cry for Kirk Cousins just because he went there and now maybe he doesn't get to play. But on the other side of it, it's just, you know, like you were saying they're not going to be very good. Their rationale in this whole thing is they think that they're going to be so good over the next few years that they're never going to be in this position again to have a chance to take a quarterback this high, which is, you know, let's say it's great confidence for a first time head coach, Raheem Morris. But I'll tell you this, you know, the Falcons, there's all this talk with that story from ESPN a couple of weeks ago about Belichick. They can talk about collaboration in the front office and, you know, making decisions together and all this different stuff. I guarantee you, Bill Belichick would not have signed Cousins to that contract
and then
turned around and drafted a rookie quarterback at number 8.
That's the part. Like, I think you just had to pick one or the other, you know, right. Like either draft a quarterback.
When did they decide they were going to do this? Like, the fact that they would sign Cousins and then, like you said, it's got to be one or the other. The fact that they would do both is just, I don't think anyone sees any clarity in this but them.
You know, it's never a good look to when the GM is literally in the war room explaining to the owner why they made that draft pick. You know what I mean? Like, I also heard that Michael Penix didn't even take an official top 30 visit to Atlanta. Atlanta saw him working out on a windy day and he was throwing the ball the best and they fell in love with him, right? And so it's right. Like,
so Spark 5219, did the Packers do the same thing to Rodgers drafting Love? Similar, but they took Love late in the first round. They traded
not a top 10 pick.
Right, not a top 10 pick. Big difference, one, in the amount of money that you've got to pay, and two, the level of talent that is sitting out there at other positions in terms of building the roster and, you know, actually helping your roster, you know, win immediately. Because, like, you know, that's the other part of it. Raheem Morris is saying, well, we're going to win so much, we're never going to have this opportunity again. Look, I said it when they signed Kirk Cousins. They'll win maybe 9 or 10 games. They're not going to be much more than that. Yeah, they're in the weakest division, but they're not going to be like they'll get to the playoffs. They're not going anywhere. Like, they're not all of a sudden
they're not Super Bowl threats. Power.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but you know, so the difference with, you know, with Rodgers and Love is they took Love a lot later, and they also hadn't just re-signed, I don't think, Aaron Rodgers, you know, to the extension. I think the extension came afterwards. That was kind of like appeasing Aaron Rodgers, if I remember right, or, you know, right around the same time. But they just invested so much money in Kirk Cousins that it just doesn't make sense, because as a top 10 pick, that's that much more. Even though it's a rookie contract, that's still a lot of money that Michael Penix is going to be commanding. So you're wrapping up a ton of money into two players at a position where you obviously are only going to play one of the guys. And then even if in 2026 they would end up cutting Kirk Cousins, they still take a salary cap hit of $35 million, you know, if they decided Michael Penix was going to be the starter in 3 years. So it's just a very odd move.
Listen, I think the move boils down to one thing. The more I think about it, I think the Falcons got some serious FOMO, because I heard that there were a lot of teams that wanted to trade it. Not a lot, but there were 2 to 3 teams that potentially wanted to trade into the top 10 and also get Penix. So I think there was a lot of buzz around Penix. They saw the arm talent around Penix. And I'm serious. I think there was like a fear of, like, everyone else kind of drove this hysteria. And the Falcons were like, oh my gosh, if this guy's so good, why don't we just take him ourselves? That's more so what it felt like to me.
So the Vikings traded up to number 10 to get former Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. Do you buy or sell that move?
I do sell this move as well. I'm not completely sold on J.J. McCarthy because of some of the stuff that we started to talk about with Jim Harbaugh.
He's a winner, Jesse. He's a winner.
During his time at Michigan, you know, like, he had a stud offensive line. He had a stud defense overall. He had a great head coach kind of calling the shots. And, you know, anyone that was listening to the draft last night, they said, I can't remember the exact number, but I know a ballpark number. They said J.J. McCarthy only threw the ball 45 times in the entirety of the fourth quarter.
I think it was less than that. I thought it was only like 35 or something.
When you start breaking it down, they played 15 games this season, 14, 15 games. So you're telling me he throws 45 passes in the fourth quarter? That's on average, at best, 3 throws the entire fourth quarter. And you want to tell me that's your franchise quarterback? It's not like that in the NFL anymore. There is more weight on the shoulders of the quarterback. I need to see JJ McCarthy improvise or see him, you know, when things aren't going right, what is he doing to develop the play or further the play? You know, what is he doing in terms of talent alone of just getting it done? You know, like, I know not everyone is Patrick Mahomes, but I still feel like your quarterback has to have the ability to make something happen as things are breaking down or not necessarily going your way. I felt like JJ McCarthy has played in an offense that everything is always going his way. All he had to do was not turn the ball over. And mm-hmm. so I'm just
exactly
I'm not sold on that aspect. The part that I am maybe buying is I think Kevin O'Connell and I think, you know, the system in Minnesota could definitely help him because Kevin O'Connell is a quarterback's guy. I think he has the potential to develop McCarthy more so. But I'm just so much on the fence because of what I was just talking about.
We'll see, because this is essentially Kevin O'Connell's career and future as a head coach in the NFL is going to rest on this, because he got the job because of the fact that he's an offensive guy and specifically a quarterback's guy. And they obviously decided that Kirk Cousins wasn't their guy. But who else was an offensive guy and a quarterback's guy? Cliff Kingsbury. And a year after drafting Josh Rosen in the first round, they hired Cliff Kingsbury and they let him go out and get his guy, Kyler Murray. You know, Kyler did some nice things, ran around, scored some touchdowns and, you know, looked dazzling and all that stuff. But how many games did they win? Right. And Minnesota's defense is appreciably worse than it was even 3 years ago. That's still got to be addressed. You're rolling the dice a lot on essentially a game manager, and Carberry picked up on the reference I was making when I said he's a winner, because that was Ian Book's biggest asset. And winning in college football, just ask those Alabama quarterbacks that Nick Saban had initially, like those game manager types, that style has not translated to the NFL. Yeah. Yep. That style has not translated to the NFL.
And DK says because their schedule was trash and they were killing clock. That kind of goes to my point. Like, when did McCarthy have to step in and take over? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he never had to put the game on his shoulders and say, we need you to get this victory. We need you to lead, you know, multiple fourth quarter drives or even a single fourth quarter drive where you got to throw the ball more than five times. You know, like, it just doesn't happen. And so if there's no data out there, how can I trust that he is capable of doing that?
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Fill in the blank. The Buffalo Bills trading down four spots with the Kansas City Chiefs and letting the Chiefs draft Texas wide receiver Xavier Worthy was blank.
Was atrocious. And this is probably the biggest rant I'm going to go into on this show. And I went into it immediately last night as soon as I saw the trade happen.
You and Mike Greenberg.
I started it before Greenberg. This is absolutely atrocious. It's absolutely embarrassing. I don't understand how you can trade. You can allow the team that has been dog walking you in the playoffs every year to go on and win their Super Bowls. How you can allow them to get even better, or allow them to take the fastest wide receiver in the draft, because that's all they want. They want speed. They don't care about if you can necessarily catch the ball. They're going to find a way for you to catch the ball. It's Andy Reid and freaking Patrick Mahomes. You know what I mean? Like, this is so atrocious. And if you're the Bills organization, if you're a Bills fan, you should feel completely embarrassed that they allowed this to happen. Why are you trading with a team that dog walks you in the playoffs every single year?
I mean, if you look at Xavier Worthy, one, speed. It's like, that's all everyone talks about. It's Xavier Worthy's speed. I see Henry has made his South Bend debut.
Dinner is due.
Yes. But I mean, they basically think this guy is going to be the next coming of Tyreek Hill. Like, when you look at him, that's the kind of guy that they got. Not a big guy, but just blazing fast and getting the ball in space and letting him make plays. That's obviously what they want. And, you know, you said it. The Bills can't beat the Chiefs, but yet they're still trading with them. They're letting them make a move like this. They traded down again with Carolina. They needed a wide receiver as well, but they traded down twice out of the first round. The Chiefs have knocked the Bills out of the playoffs three of the last 4 years. And you know what? They're doing it with the quarterback
that they traded.
That they, the Chiefs made the trade with the Buffalo Bills to get Patrick Mahomes. Like, and the Bills are still making deals with the
Chiefs.
That's
what I mean.
When are they going to learn?
It's like they're their same. It's like they're the stepbrother to the Chiefs. They don't care about how much they get beat up, but they're still going to continue to do business with them. It's just, I don't understand. And I've heard a lot of rumblings about, you know, maybe the Bills are doing this so they can acquire capital to trade for someone like T. Higgins or Deebo Samuel to get their wide receiver. That's fine. But you can do that with literally anyone else but the team that has beat you to win their Super Bowls in this era. They have beaten you every time to go on to win their Super Bowls.
Because all the analysts were talking about, well, they still like the value they can get, obviously, by moving down. The value doesn't matter. It's who you're trading with. If they made a deal with even the Raiders, or, you know, name your team, anybody but the Chiefs.
Literally anyone else but the Chiefs.
Yes, anyone but the Chiefs. They're the two-time defending champions. They still have Patrick Mahomes. They won the Super Bowl with their defense without any wide receivers to speak of, and you're just going to let them trade right up into your spot and get the receiver that they
coveted. The person that they were salivating over the entire first round. There is no one else that they wanted but the guy who ran a freaking 4.2 and can be Tyreek Hill 2.0 in that offense. It's just, it's literally mind-blowing. I think I told you this last night. I think the Cowboys can never trade within the division. I don't feel like you can trade within the division. And if you're a team like the Bills, you can't trade with a team that is year in the playoffs.
Remember they did Devontae Adams a couple of years ago. They made that swap with the Eagles, interestingly enough. But the Cowboys did. But I mean, generally you don't see that happen. You don't see teams trade within the same division. And if I'm the Bills with all the recent history that I've got with the Chiefs, I don't get it. I don't get making that move at all. So Bill Belichick was part of Pat McAfee's draft coverage last night. They announced at the end of the show, Belichick's going to do a weekly segment with McAfee on Mondays during the NFL season. And Belichick is also going to have a recurring role on the Manning cast during Monday Night Football this season. So which of those two are you most looking forward to seeing Bill Belichick on?
This is a funny question because it's like, it's polar opposites. You're going to get like fun Bill Belichick in one, and then you're going to get like serious Bill Belichick in the other. And I don't know if anyone watched, you know, McAfee's show last night that had Bill Belichick on there, but like, I think I saw more personality out of Bill Belichick than I did his entire time with the New England Patriots. Right. So like, I think that's fun. I think you're going to see a side of Bill Belichick that you didn't maybe potentially know. But I'm going to say I'm more looking forward to the Manning cast because, I mean, I watch the Manning cast because I'm a nerd of the game and I like learning about the game. So having someone like Bill Belichick on there with, you know, two Hall of Fame quarterbacks breaking down what's going on and giving their perspective, like that sounds like a great time to me just because I like the X's and O's side of things. I don't care about laughing while talking about football. I want to kind of I want to learn when talking about football.
Don't you laugh here when talking about football? Don't no, you have a good time? Is it all X and O's? Huh? Come on. Come on.
No, but you know what I mean.
No, I don't know what you mean. No, I don't. You want to hear Peyton and Bill break it down. You want those X's and O's. And I tell you what, like he was good because we kind of flipped around. We sampled a little bit of everybody last night during the draft. We sampled the McAfee show over on YouTube. We watched the main ESPN. We watched the NFL Network. And for about 5 seconds, we put it on ABC where they had the College Game Day crew. And we were like, and we got off of that. We flipped it back to the other stuff. I found Belichick pretty entertaining. And like he told the whole story about when they traded for Randy Moss and how he called Randy Moss and said, hey, this is Bill Belichick. And Randy Moss hung up on him right away.
Twice.
Yeah, he hung up on him twice, had to call him back. And, you know, that whole story, you know, so like we did get to see a different side of Bill Belichick. I think it's just nuts that McAfee and that crew that he's got, you know, like he had Mad Mel Kiper. He had the Mel Kiper impersonator, you know, all night long. It's the same guy that was doing the Lou Holtz impersonation, you know, when all that stuff stirred up back before the Ohio State game. But he's doing Mel Kiper all night. And Bill Belichick, you know, there were a couple of times he's like, well, he looked like, you know, he was thinking, what the hell am I doing here? You know, that kind of thing. But at the same time, he looked like he was having a good time. So I'm looking forward, I think, to the McAfee stuff during the season, because that's something that I know I'll kind of be able to definitely sit down and watch and kind of get his thoughts on a week-to-week basis. But Bill Belichick has definitely come out as a different kind of guy in his first media appearance.
Yeah, and I think it's good for Bill Belichick because I think ultimately what he's doing with the McAfee and, you know, with the Manning cast is I think he's preparing himself. It's like practice, you know what I mean? If he doesn't coach football, his next role is going to be talking on television. And so I think it's good practice to get out in front. And I honestly respect Bill Belichick too, because he made his big board for the entire draft, even though he's, you know, no longer a coach. So he put in all the time, all the effort, watched all these guys. And I still think it's fun to see, you know, how he would have going about it if he were still coaching and what players he would be interested in, et cetera.
Yeah. Carberry says that Belichick didn't seem like he wanted to be there. You know, he was just there and people were dropping F-bombs like they were at the bar. And I mean, that's especially when they're only on YouTube, not ESPN. That was, you know, definitely the thing. The biggest problem I had with that, because we kind of tried to keep it on there, they apparently early on, they were accidentally tipping picks because someone was telling them, okay, here's the pick coming, but Goodell hadn't announced it yet. So they got in trouble for announcing picks. And then when we were watching, like there were picks being made and they weren't even talking about the picks.
They were just talking about it. And they're like,
yeah.
So-and-so was drafted.
That's right. Anthony giving you props, though. He said you had the best rant since my rant that inspired the women's basketball teams.
Just insane.
It's just, you know, it's funny because for someone who's obviously not a fan of Buffalo, you're very passionate about that whole move last night.
Well, it's not only that, but it's like, why are you allowing the Chiefs to continue to get better? We're still chasing the Chiefs.
I know.
Why are you giving them the offensive?
They've already got the best quarterback in football and arguably the best coach in football right now. And you're just going to give them another weapon to make them even better again? Let them restock?
So like that's what's the frustrating part is, like, it's double embarrassing because, again, it's the team that literally smacks your booty cheeks every single playoff appearance. Yeah. And it sets the rest of the league back because we're all chasing the Chiefs.
Yeah. You deserve what you get if you're going to make that kind of move. You absolutely deserve what you get. Okay. Oh, excuse me.
This is a good question. I don't know if you saw this.
Rabid Nile Chihuahua says, Jesse, NFL said players can wear those guardian caps. I did see this. They wear in practice in the actual games this year. What do you think about that?
Are they an eyesore? Yeah. Is it going to look a little funny? Yeah. Is it going to take a little bit to get used to? Also, yeah, but I mean, I'm all about player safety. And so if we can reduce concussions and it allows us to continue to play the game how we want to, and we don't have to change kickoff rules, tackling rules, you know, all of these things, if this allows more protection and maybe less stringency on the rest of the rules, I think it's a great idea. Again, it's just going to look a little bit awkward, and I'd be curious to see who are the guys that really want to opt in. I think all offensive linemen will probably wear them. And I think defensive players will wear them more so than offensive players.
I'm trying to remember, was it, this is way before your time, was it Don Beebe or was it Kelso, maybe? One of the Buffalo Bills, they weren't the Guardian helmets, but it was like you had the regular helmet, and then they made like this extra layer. Maybe Carberry knows the answer to this since he's the Bills fan, but it was like another kind of, it was like an outer shell that they put on top of, you know, it was basically kind of like, you know, like a, you know, original Guardian helmet, like 30 years ago. It was like just extra padding that they put on the outside. Yeah, it was Mark Kelso. Thanks very much, Anthony. I wonder if they'll, like, at least, because right now, all these Guardian helmets are just, you know, it's the padding and stuff like that. If they're going to let them wear them in games, I wonder if they'll at least put, you know, like, the logos and stuff on the outside of the Guardian, you know, to kind of try to camouflage them a little bit. But I'm with you. It's, you know, it's about safety and trying to reduce the risk of concussions and stuff like that. I, like, you would think that every offensive and defensive lineman and like fullback type guy would wear those things with as much battering ram as they do, you know?
Well, yeah. And the offensive lineman and defensive lineman are literally ramming their head into each other every single play. You know, the wide receivers, the defensive backs, I think you'll see linebackers definitely wearing them, you know what I mean, because they're tackling so much. But like wide receivers, there's a less chance that they're going to have head-to-head contact every play when compared to, you know, someone like an offensive lineman.
Yep. And Carberry said it reminded him of a wrestling mat wrapped on a helmet. That's a pretty good description right there. Okay, so I've got a baseball question for you here, Jess.
I think this is a cool question because it can encompass all leagues, not just the league, the baseball league.
I think so too. This was interesting because there is so much technology today. So Max Scherzer, Texas Rangers pitcher, said this about umpires this week. Quote, "We need to rank the umpires. Let the electronic strike zone rank the umpires. We need to have a conversation about the bottom, let's call it 10%, whatever you want, to declare the bottom is, and talk about relegating those umpires to the minor leagues," end quote. So do you buy or sell it?
Yeah, I buy it, and I especially buy it for the MLB because of there's a definitive strike zone, right? And when you're calling something that is balls or strikes, there is a definitive yes or no answer. Is this a ball? Is this or a strike? And so I think this is a great idea from the MLB. And I've said this before. I think no matter what league you're in, the officials, umpires, referees all need to be held more accountable because they have such an impact on the game, right? Like those calls can have such a great impact on the game. And so I think it gets a little bit harder for something like the NFL or the NBA because of fouls are not a definitive yes or no answer. They're still what's the word, like ambiguity or how you perceive it, right? Like how one referee perceives pass interference compared to the other. There's right. more gray area about those sort of things. Again, with ball or strike, it's yes or no. You have a box and is it in that box, right? And so I think it's a great idea because of, you know, these referees with how much is at stake, millions of dollars, the severity of these games, I don't understand why that more officials and referees can't be held accountable, right? Like subjective. That is exactly the word I was looking for.
I wasn't going to cut you off, but I was letting you kind of continue down your path. But yes, subjective is the word. Thank you very much, DK.
But just like everyone else, like we get graded at our jobs. We get, you know, professional athletes get graded as players. And if you're not performing well, they're going to find someone to replace you. And I think that should be the same for.
I completely agree with this theory, but there are a couple of issues. I'll save the bigger one for the end. But the first issue is, okay, if you're going to relegate, for example, that means you're bringing up minor league umpires. So, okay, So you're getting the best of the minor league umpires, which in theory
still isn't better.
Those guys are like the replacements during the season when guys go on vacation and stuff like that. And, you know, like they're kind of like they're getting opportunities and they're kind of bouncing back and forth anyway. And if they were good enough, they would stick around. And same in the NFL, the NBA, wherever it is, like the guys who were in the NFL and the NBA started off officiating in college and worked their way, you know, into those professional opportunities. And we're at a point where the overall level of officiating, I think, has declined across the board in every sport. So I don't like, maybe you keep guys more on their toes and make them work harder to be better.
Yes.
You know, with the threat of this,
there's
got to
be incentive to be good.
Right. But then the bigger issue that's going to hold this up is all these umpires have unions. So the union is going to hold this up. The union is never going to go for, well, you know, Mike, you know, you're not going to relegate these guys because they all want their service time and, you know, retirement and insurance and all that, all the benefits and stuff like that.
So be good.
I know, but it's all part of collective bargaining.
And my salary, if I, you know, do a crappy job at work on a consistent basis.
Yep. Well, I think we're going to have to wrap it up with that because I'm getting a call here that I need to get moving, but, a good Friday show, I thought. Did you throw something in there?
No, I thought this was – I couldn't wait to talk about – or to do this show today, and not being able to be here all week sucked, but being able to talk about the, you know, the first round of the draft, talk about Joe Alt, and I'm just as excited for tonight. I mean, in an hour, you got, you know, rounds 2 and 3. The Cowboys are playing at the Cubs are playing at Fenway. So it's just going to be another, you know, great night of sports. I'm really happy.
Thanks, DK. DK says best Friday show this week. All right. Thank you very much.
Tommy.
Appreciate it. Hey. Tommy made it. He's not feeling well. Tommy, go back and watch from the beginning. Glad to have you here. I was just thinking the other day, we haven't seen or heard as much from Tommy.
Tommy, there was a good shout out to you at the beginning of the show. So you should catch that.
Go back and catch it. That's right. Well, have a good weekend. It is NFL draft weekend. Second and third rounds of the draft are tonight. So we should, I think, find out where at least a couple more Notre Dame guys are going to be going. Uh-oh.
Just don't even read it.
Vince Shade. Best show. No Vince. Is there a connection? Uh-oh. All right. Thank you very much, Carberry. As Carberry says, hit that like button on your way out. Thank you very much, Matt, as well, and everybody else. Again, have a good weekend, and we will talk to you on Monday when we know where all these Notre Dame guys are going in the draft, and maybe we have some clarity on some other stuff as well. Super sticker from DK. Thanks for slipping that in right before we
DK,
wrap.
DK, you're the best.
You are. Hit that like button. We will talk to you on Monday on IB Nation Sports Talk.